If you have a podcast and want to monetize it, stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Right now I'm talking with Darren Miller from a band called 96 Bitter Beings. You might know. Exactly. The band is called 96 Bitter Beings. Synergy Restored, coming out November 4th via Nuclear Blast. How you doing, man?
I'm doing amazing. Amazing. Aside from not knowing how to fix a computer's audio, I'm doing great.
Where are you right now? Because you have quite the record collection. I need to find the exact coordinates of where you live and do a little...
I live pretty much... I tell people Santa Clarita, and then okay. I say Valencia, and then I just say, I'm in Magic Mountain.
Nice.
And then they're like, oh, okay, now I get it.
So people listening right now probably do not see the backdrop, but he has like a crazy record collection. Basically, looks like a record store behind him. How long have you been like a vinyl head?
Probably since I was 4 years old.
Okay.
And it gets worse, if you notice. I know they can't see over there, but this is just half of it. Yeah, it's been a long time. I have to get it estimated or find out how much it's worth, but it's pretty sick because I can't stop buying them.
Okay, so gun to your head, pick four records. Which ones are you picking?
I'm picking the Japanese version of Kiss's Originals 2. Are you talking about in terms of how much they're worth?
Or how much they're worth to you?
Okay, I'd have to take Gorguts' Erosion of Sanity.
Oh, man.
That's tough. Malevolent Creation, Retribution, and My Bloody Valentine's Loveless.
That is a good amount of... damn, dude. That's solid. For everything from Gorguts to My Bloody Valentine. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, I like all kinds of music. I just look for good songs.
Yeah, dude,
that's all that's important to me.
So, who influenced you to pick up a guitar, man? Like what was it? You know, the alternative stuff, like the My Bloody Valentine. Was it like metal stuff? Because your stuff is so much in the middle there. It's like hooks, but it's riffing.
Right, because there's such a varied degree of influences. I grew up with my mom playing disco around the house while she was vacuuming.
Yeah.
And picked out the good parts of what that kind of music is about.
Now that you say that, I can hear some dance parts in some of your, kind of catchy,
definitely,
dancey.
Definitely. Saturday Night Fever, man, that's Staying Alive is an awesome song. I get a lot of stuff from that soundtrack, mm-hmm. That whole soundtrack. That doesn't have a bad song on it. And then, like, later on, of course... hanging around my cousin's house, I look in back at me and I see that famous picture, famous poster of Ace Frehley with his guitar on fire. And I'm like, whatever that is, I want to be a part of that.
Yes.
I was only 2 years old, and that's like my first memory. And from there, I just, I was obsessed with Kiss and just finding out what rock music was. And then when I was 8, I started taking guitar lessons. Mm-hmm. And then I discovered, since I was playing guitar, I discovered, heavier music, because when you learn to play, you start learning to play guitar, you want to challenge yourself, and the best way to challenge yourself is either get into jazz or get into metal. So from there, I discovered from Kiss, I went to Ozzy, and then from Ozzy, I went to Metallica, and I kept saying, how much heavier does this stuff get? And then I found the underground music, which led me to Malaya Rage and Death, and then all the Roadrunner bands, like Pestilence, Gorguts, Annihilator, Believer, Cynic. And then I just started to once I wanted to put my own band together, I just spliced together all of everything that I love, like My Bloody Valentine. I just, you know, just stuff that was really bizarre.
Yep.
And I just somehow just made a mold of all the best of these types of music and made my own.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how it happened.
And you're talking about these record labels. You're talking about this rich history of this underground music. How fitting is it now that you're on Nuclear Blast, which is a label that has a crazy history? Not only do they have a immense roster, everyone from Behemoth to, you know, you guys to, you know, so many classic bands, but just the back catalog is crazy as far as like death metal, classic metal, power metal. It's freaking awesome.
I know. They're the best label in the world. And it's funny because if we had about three more hours, I could tell you strangest stories about how I ended up where I ended up. But we also were on Roadrunner.
Yep.
And I was always trying to get signed to Roadrunner, and I was constantly being turned down. And then finally we had an album out that was doing really well, and I was still trying to get signed to Roadrunner, even though we were already signed to a different label.
It was on Volcom, right?
We were on Volcom.
Yeah, exactly.
And we were selling so... We were selling so many records. They had this amazing distribution, and our albums were everywhere. And I'm still trying to get over to Roadrunner. I'm saying, I said, Monty, we sold 30,000 copies. And he's like, sure, whatever. And then we signed with Island, and he calls me. And he's like, did you guys sign with Island? I was like, yes, I'm trying to tell you that this stuff is, I'm not lying.
We've been trying to get with you for a while now, dude.
I know, but what's funny is that eventually when we decided to part with Island, they didn't let us go. We actually had a phone call. With them, and I said, look, you know, we know you guys aren't going to push us. You're just going to put out our records and just hope we fly, you know?
Yeah.
So then, you know, we instantly signed with Roadrunner, and I got to work with Monty Connor, who had been, you know, turning me down for all those years. And then I did a record for Nuclear Blast in 2011 that was a huge death metal record called World Under Blood. It was hugely brutal. It was just almost over the top. And then I was on my own for a little bit. I did an acoustic record for Megaforce, and I did a couple records self-released, and they did well. So then I ended up back on Nuclear Blast, who... Monty Connor left Roadrunner to work there. So I'm working with him, and I'm working with a lot of other great people that you can't be on a record company if you don't know anyone.
Absolutely. I mean,
that freaks me out.
Yeah. We hear it all the time. I'm a big podcast buff, and I listen to all these, you know, podcasts, whether it be hip hop, metal, hardcore, punk. All these musicians will talk about how, you know, historically, like, they had an A&R who was all on their team and they were gung ho. Yeah. And then that person leaves, and it's like, well, now it's just you and a bunch of people who don't think you're a priority. So,
exactly. And that's funny because when we left Island, our A&R guy left the label at the same time. And I was like, well, that was a good move.
Yep.
But then, like, I was hanging out with a band called Hoobastank. We were actually friends with, but we weren't, you know, we were just friends because we took them out on their first tour. And I was like, so what's Island like now that Paul's gone? And they're like, awful. Awful, man. Nobody there knows what they're doing. So that's the kind of situation that stuck in my head, and I'm like, God, that would suck if the guy that was rooting for you and getting everything done for you just up and leaves, work somewhere else, and you're stuck in this contract. So I mean, I know a lot of the people at Nuclear Blast, and they've been friends for decades. So, you know, I just feel like there's a huge connection and a lot of friendship there, and it's not just all business. It's not just all, oh, I hope they give me a call back, or who is this, who is that? So we're happy.
That's awesome, man. So I kind of wanted to chat a little bit about, like, the formation of 96 Bitter Beings. Obviously, the namesake, I would assume you kind of just wanted to take, you know, this original songwriting, because you were kind of the brainchild, the mastermind behind CKY, from what I understand. Those are your songs, those first couple records, and kind of just like take what those fans love, because we love those first few records, and then just kind of put your own stamp on it and venture off in your own lane with that original idea, right?
You hit it right on the head. A lot of fans were saying, oh man, you know, we missed that sound and we're not getting it out of quote unquote CKY.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? I got a new band together. We were doing a 20th anniversary of another project that I did when I was in high school. It was 20 years since we had put out a CD by the other band called Foreign Objects. So we were working on that. The guys that I was working on that with, I was like, you know what? Let's do a rock band. So when my grandmother turned 96,
yeah,
I said, it was the day my grandmother turned 96, and she sent me a picture of her giving the horns.
That's so cool.
I said, that is the name of the band. 96 has been a huge number. It plays a huge role in my life, and I don't know why, but it does. And I'm just running with it. So 96, the song 96 White Bitter Beings has put a lot on my plate. It's people, I mean, we started this interview going that, so yeah, I mean, it's a very important number. I have yet to find out why, but yeah, well, like I was saying, my grandma turned 96. I said, we're going to need a name for this band. Obviously I want to have a little bit of a tie into the past. So
yeah,
96 Bitter Beings it was.
That's awesome, man. I'm stoked to hear this new record. Obviously, it's called Synergy Restored, like I mentioned in the beginning, out November 4th on Nuclear Blast. I wanted to kind of... So, I'm probably like so many people, where the first time I heard you playing that riff was the VHS, man. Before viral videos. Exactly. Before the viral videos, before, you know, you could just send a link to a friend, it was the CKY video. It was the VHS, my friend.
Hard to remember that time. Isn't it hard to remember the time before we had the internet?
Yep. I mean,
it's so, I try to think about it, and I can't. I can't think about it. Like, I don't even remember. We used to just go outside and just film this crazy, stupid, and neighbors would get pissed off. And it was the only way to entertain ourselves, because either school was boring or summer was too hot or just something had to be done. And, you know, that's all it really was. We were taping stuff maybe a year or two before that. Just videotaping practice, like band practice, and videotaping everything. And then this came around. It's a very peculiar story, but it all came around and we connected it east-west. And then East Coast and West Coast put it together and it became what MTV called Jackass. And we were the soundtrack. And it all fell into place perfectly. It worked perfectly, even though people didn't understand CKY a video or CKY a band, or it was just both.
Yeah.
It was its own entity. And, you know, we were the musicians and the other guys were our friends and they did all the stunts. That's just what it was. And then, I mean, the VHS tape. And then I used to have the whole box set with VHS tapes in it. And it's just so bizarre to think that was so long ago, but it really, I mean, it's crazy how long ago that was, but it doesn't seem like it.
It's, I mean, like, I like, dude, that was just like, you know, pre any of that stuff. It was just like, yo, did you see CKY? Yeah, I probably watched it like 20 times in like weekends, where it was just like the most hilarious thing. And the familiar riffs and, you know, that song and like all your songs, the first couple records, it just got ingrained in my head. It's like a living part of my my teenage years. The soundtrack, dude.
I know, that's the number one thing I get told, is that it brings people back to, watching that stuff brings people back to where they were, you know, in high school or younger, actually, obviously. But, you know, it's, nostalgia is an amazing thing. Like, when you hear or see something that brings you back to where you were as a kid, where you were maybe happier or you had less responsibilities, it's an awesome thing. At least for me, it is. And I go crazy with that stuff. It's amazing. But I forgot what I was going to say.
Well, I will say it is the first time I saw a Parker guitar. That blew my mind. Just like the headless Parker guitar, was just blown away. That was you who played the Parker, right? Do you still play Parker guitar?
I don't. Parker guitars went out of business.
Oh,
what happened was, I when I lived in Philadelphia, I lived on East Barnard Street. And right on Gay Street was a Burger King and a music store.
Okay.
Al Bean's music, and I walked down there and I saw Parker guitar, and I thought it looked so futuristic, and totally. I was like, what the hell is that? So I worked. I had three jobs in high school. I worked and I saved and I saved and I saved and I saved up $1,200, went back there. Thank God it was still there, and I bought it, and I took it home, and I just thought it was the coolest thing. And, you know, I'm not the kind of guitar player that listens for tones or, you know, with that kind of ear that, you know, I don't like this guitar. It doesn't sound right. It was just the way that it looked was as good as it sounded, sure. as far as I was concerned. So, you know, once all that jackass stuff and the video stuff started to happen, and I was always using that guitar, I reached out to them. They didn't have a good A&R, like, artist relations.
Sure.
Thing going on, so I had to reach out to them, and they sent me quite a few guitars.
Awesome.
And but then the guy that was doing that for me either left or got fired, so they were always changing A&R over at, and then they got bought out by Washburn, and it got it became even harder to get a hold of somebody. And then I decided that, okay, this company's, you know, too difficult, because I was always damaging and destroying my guitars on.
Well, they're so light.
Yeah, they're light. Yeah, I had
you can pick it up
the
with
only
a finger.
One that I have left. The only one that I have left is the one that has my wife's face on it, and it's the lightest one that I have.
Oh, that's awesome.
The Parker P42. And I used to have, I think, 16 of them, and I got rid of all of them.
Holy shit.
And then somebody told me recently that they went out of business like 5 years ago.
Mm.
So now I'm playing Esoteric.
Okay, right on.
Which
man.
Are really nice guitars.
You certainly seem to be someone who likes to play kind of like the like left-brained ones, like the ones that aren't the like mainstream. Is that something you always gravitated towards? Like something kind of like left of center guitar styles?
You mean like trying to avoid any kind of mainstream brand?
Yeah, or maybe just like some brands that aren't as you know well known. Is do you kind of go toward more of just different smaller guitar brands?
Well, yeah, I mean, in a way, yeah, because I'm always trying to root for the underdog, anybody that's trying to come up.
Yeah.
You know, and for there was a split second when I was with Jackson Guitars.
Sure.
And I did a whole photo shoot. It was around the time I put out the World Under Blood record for Nuclear Blast. They hooked me up with Jackson Guitars, and I just found them so, because of the shape. I knew that they were legendary. I knew that all my favorite guitar players were using them. But when it came to me, it was the shape that made them so difficult to, first of all, to sit down and play.
Yeah.
And live, they were difficult to play. I don't want to put them down, because there's a lot of guitar players that are totally comfortable with that.
But just for wasn't
me,
for you.
It just wasn't the same thing.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter, because I ended up saying something that ruined my relationship with them anyway, live on stage. I got totally blackout wasted. I'm on stage. I'm saying, I can't fucking play this goddamn thing. And then it gets back to them. And then there was a parting of the ways. So my big mouth got me in trouble then. But you know what? I guess it's all the better for it, because I don't know how else I would have been able to say, you know what? I think I should look elsewhere, because I can't play these things. They're awesome looking guitars, but man, when you try to put, especially the Warlock, I think is what they were giving me. They were giving me there's all kinds of names for their guitars. And because of Chuck Schuldiner from Death and all the guys at Deicide and all the guys that play the BC Rich, I wanted to be able to play them so bad, and I was thrilled to hook up with them, but I couldn't play them.
It stabs you.
Yeah, they were stabbing me, or there was some kind of bend on some kind of curve when I put it down to play with it on my knee, or like maybe it's missing my knee or something, so I'd have to stand up and play, and like still slipping off the fretboard and missing, and so it was very difficult for me to play.
It's like I'd prefer my guitar not to hurt me, but you know, that's just a small question.
Exactly. Yeah, those ends are really sharp.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it's like that Vinnie Vincent guitar, man. Yeah. That thing will take your eyes out.
Absolutely, man.
Double flying V. You know, I love the look of those guitars, but I just, you know, I wish I could play them, but I can't. I like a very standard guitar body.
Sure. You know, I'm not trying to take up your whole day or anything with this interview, so I just have a couple more questions for you, man. So,
As long as you want. I'm good.
I appreciate it, man. So, it's been a crazy couple years. Yeah. Music seems to be something that gets you through. Obviously, you know, the backdrop is all music. You're an avid music fan, a musician yourself. But when you're having like a really shitty day, maybe if it was sometime during the pandemic or, you know, just something going on, what's an album that you can reach for, whether it be a heavy record, a slow record, a soft record, just something that will recenter you and bring you back to a good place?
Well, it's funny that you bring this up, because I have been having, you know, all of us the last 2 years have been having this too, and I don't know how depressed people got. Some people ate, some people kept themselves busy, some people did a lot of drinking.
Yeah,
I just became very depressed because I was trying so hard to get this project out.
Yeah,
and whenever I would find myself, even if I was in a mood to get off the couch and not binge watch TV shows, when I'd come in here and I'd listen to music, it was usually Anathema, which I don't know. I think a British band. Pretty sure they're a British band. They started out as a death metal band and then became kind of like
Opeth or kind of like that style. Catatonia.
Yeah, exactly. And I have an album called Blackwater Park that I really liked. Then when I got my hands on Anathema, I was like, man, I think that this band might know how to write more to my liking, because Anathema writes songs that I wish I had written or could write. So they have a greatest hits double vinyl that's out that I just played constantly.
Yeah.
And then, you know, whenever I would get tired and angry at COVID, it was always Malevolent Creation.
Yeah.
Or Gore Guts.
Nice.
All that stuff. But I didn't listen to too much music during the pandemic because I don't even think I could get myself up off the couch to come in to my room, to my man cave and play music.
Yeah.
So
I'm glad you're at a different place now, man. It's really great.
And a lot of the time was spent having COVID. I've had it 3 times now.
God damn.
The first was the worst, and the third time was on our summer tour that we just completed.
Yeah.
It was miserable. I was miserable, and I think everybody was miserable. But I think that for me, it was like, the main source of my misery was, God, I want to put these records out.
Yep.
Because we were on tour in 2020, and then right after we came home is when the pandemic started. So a lot of people say their last show was 96 Bitter Beings before pandemic hit, because we were right there, man.
Yeah.
It was like end of February, and then it hit kind of in March. And then as soon as it stopped, we got right back out there, and we just finished 5 weeks. But it was difficult for everybody. It was just awful. That's my phone.
Well, the album's about to come out, like you said, November 4th, Nuclear Blast, Synergy Restored, 96 Bitter Beings. Darren, I got one last question for you, man. Pick a scar on your body and tell us the story of how you got it.
Okay, I got one scar. And without anybody jumping to conclusions, it's on my wrist.
Okay.
Looks like I probably tried to kill myself. I don't know if you see it.
Yeah, I see it. Yeah, right there.
And then right here.
Okay.
What happened was, me and my brother were chasing each other around the house. I was in fifth grade.
Yep.
And I was just about to catch him, and I slipped, and there was a glass on the coffee table. My arm came down on the glass, and I hit my chin on the table, and I was like, I got up and I put my hand on my chin like, ow. And then all of a sudden there's blood spurting all over my face. And my grandmother was there. My grandmother, who is now 102.
Jesus Christ. That's amazing.
She was like 85 at the time.
Sure.
Something.
A young age of 85, right?
Yeah. And my grandmom is somebody you don't want to scare to death.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh my God. She was like, oh my God, oh my God. I was bleeding like crazy, and the glass had gone through here and come out here.
Oh my God.
So I went to the hospital, got all stitched up, and it never hurt, which I thought was the strangest thing. It did not hurt at all, ever. Like, my chin did. So I had the stitches. I remember they itched like a bitch. and then got them taken out, and then I never got another scar on my head, except when I was in second grade, I got the chicken pots. I was scratching my ear. But I don't think you can really see.
No. Just, wow, that sounds pretty brutal. Thanks, you didn't scare your grandma too much. It's amazing that she's 102 years old. Shout out to your grandma. That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's when, 6 years ago is when I named the band 96, so she's still going.
That's amazing, man. Darren, thank you so much for taking the time, man, and chatting with us. Any final words for the Northwest audience?
You know, if you love vinyl, go pre-order the vinyl for Synergy Restored.
Yep.
Look it up. You can Google. You know, we're all on the obvious socials.
Yep. We don't have to pass around a VHS anymore.
No. So, I just want to say thanks for your support. I hope anybody that doesn't know what we sound like, go check it out. Hope you like it, and we'll see you on the road.
Awesome. Darren, thank you so much, man. Have a good one.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you, man. Bye.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.